Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from AntiWar.com, and this is Anti-War News for Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. So the top story at AntiWar.com today, the big news is that the Nord Stream pipelines have come under attack, and there was some major damage and leaks to these pipelines that connect Russia to Germany. So European officials on Tuesday said that massive leaks in the Nord Stream natural gas pipelines that were caused by explosions were likely the result of sabotage, raising questions on who the culprit might be. The Nord Stream pipelines, again, they connect Russia to Germany via the Baltic Sea. Russia recently stopped shipping gas through the Nord Stream 1 indefinitely, and the construction of Nord Stream 2 has been completed, but the pipeline has never been fully operational. Germany suspended the project after Russia invaded Ukraine. So two leaks were discovered in Nord Stream 1, and one leak was discovered in Nord Stream 2 after the operator reported a sudden drop in pressure overnight on Monday. While neither pipeline has been delivering to Europe, both contain gas under pressure. Two underwater explosions were recorded earlier on Monday near the Danish island of Bornholm in the Baltic Sea, and this is where the leaks occurred. Nord Stream AG, that's the operator of the pipelines, they said it was not possible to estimate when the damage could be fixed. So it seems like it's pretty serious damage. EU, Swedish, Norwegian, and Danish officials have all said the damage was likely caused by a deliberate attack. And in Russia, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that sabotage could not be ruled out. Now, Radek Sikorski, he is a former Polish foreign minister and currently a member of the European Parliament. He suggested on Twitter that the U.S. was behind the attack. He posted a picture on Twitter of the disturbance in the water caused by the leaks and wrote, "Thank you, USA." So this is, again, a member of the European Parliament in Poland, total Russia hawk, thanking the U.S. for this damage that was done to the Nord Stream pipelines. And, I mean, I don't know what else we're supposed to take from this other than that he's saying that the U.S. Did this. Now, if you look on Twitter, what he said, you know, he had some follow-up tweets because, of course, this really caused quite a bit of controversy, this tweet. And he didn't back down on it. He just basically said that Nord Stream's, you know, the only purpose of it was for Putin to be able to blackmail or wage war on Eastern Europe. So he's very clearly against these pipelines. He says all Ukrainian and Baltic Sea states have opposed Nord Stream's construction for 20 years. So, again, you know, super Russia hawk. He's not sympathetic to Moscow at all. So it's not like a Russian official making this claim. It's a Polish official and a EU official. And in another tweet, and he's married to Anne Applebaum, the American journalist who currently writes for The Atlantic, which is interesting. But he described it in another tweet because a Russian official, a former Russian UN official, you know, quote tweeted what he said and said, "Hey, look at this. You know, this is them admitting that who was behind this attack." And he described what he said as a hypothesis. So it seems like he's guessing or he's maybe not guessing, but maybe has some inside information. Who knows? We don't know exactly what happened here, but this is big news that this guy said this. And according to a report from Germany's Der Spiegel, the U.S. had foreknowledge of a possible attack on the pipelines. Citing unnamed sources, Spiegel reported that the German government received a tip over the summer from the CIA that Nord Stream could be attacked, and Berlin assumed that both pipelines could be targeted. So the Nord Stream pipelines have... the Nord Stream 2 pipeline has long been in the crosshairs of Washington. And the U.S. has tried to stop its construction by imposing sanctions. So the U.S. really wanted Nord Stream 2, you know, not to happen because it would have doubled the capacity, nearly doubled at least, of Russian gas that could have been shipped to Europe. It would have really increased the trade relationship between Russia and Germany and the rest of Europe. And the U.S. really did not want it to happen. And, you know, there's some evidence that Biden might have taken some extreme steps to stop it. Again, when Russia invaded, Olaf Scholz, the German chancellor, suspended the project, but he didn't cancel it completely. You know, there was always a possibility that it could be restarted, unlikely with all the sanctions and stuff that the EU has been saying, been putting on Russia, but it's possible. So now back in February, before Russia invaded, he said, if Russia invades, then there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. He said, quote, we will bring an end to it, end quote. And he was asked by a reporter, well, what does that mean? What will you do since the project is in Germany's control? He said, quote, I promise you we will be able to do that, end quote. And then Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, she's notoriously known for being involved in the 2014 coup in Ukraine that ousted Viktor Yanukovych and sparked Russia taking Crimea and the war in the eastern Donbass. She made a similar warning, and this was back in January, again before the invasion. She said, quote, I promise. Oh, sorry. That's Biden's quote. This is Nuland. She said, quote, if Russia invades Ukraine one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward, end quote. And this is from the State Department's Twitter account. And Blinken, he commented on the attacks on Tuesday, saying that the damage was in nobody's interest. He didn't go out there and accuse Russia like Ukraine did. He just said, that there's some initial reports indicating that it might have been an attack. And he said that if this did happen, it's clearly in no one's interest. So I think it's pretty clear, at least at this point, that this was an attack. Again, three leaks, two explosions, both pipelines. I mean, there's no way that could be a coincidence. The question is now who is behind it. And again, we don't know, but you know, if we were investigating a crime, there's some pretty strong motive here from the U.S. to want to do this. Russia, on the other hand, which Ukraine accused them of being behind it, but there's no reason really to think that just because it's Russia, it's a Russian pipeline. Why would they attack it? They have the power to cut it off. They don't need to attack it. I mean, gas is leaking into the Baltic Sea, Russian gas. That doesn't seem to be in their interest. And as recently as September 17th, Putin was calling on Europe saying, hey, you know, you're facing these energy shortages. Winter is coming. Why don't you restart the Nord Stream pipeline? So Putin said, quote, this was about 10 days ago. He said, quote, the bottom line is if you have an urge, if it's so hard for you, just lift the sanctions on Nord Stream 2, which is 55 billion cubic meters of gas per year. Just push the button and everything will get going, end quote. So the attacks on Nord Stream, they also coincide with the inauguration of the Baltic Pipe. And that is another natural gas pipeline that will carry gas from Norway through Denmark to Poland. And the Polish Prime Minister said at a ceremony, which happened on the same day, on this pipeline, he said, quote, the era of Russian domination of gas is coming to an end, an era marked by blackmail, threats, and coercion, end quote. So the EU says that this pipeline should start transporting gas on October 1st. So that's what we know right now. And again, we don't know for sure what happened, but the U.S. definitely has its motive. All right, so the next one here, Russia is readying to absorb Ukrainian territory after referendums conclude. So Russian-backed authorities in Russian-controlled areas of Ukraine have reported that a huge majority of voters favor joining Russia as referendums concluded on Tuesday. They were conducted in the breakaway Donbass republics of Luhansk and Donetsk and in the Kherson and Zaporizhia regions, all Russian-controlled territory. They don't control all of Kherson and Zaporizhia, most of those areas, but it's about, you know, this area that they're voting on, it's about 15% of Ukrainian territory. It's definitely a significant chunk. And according to the Russian officials, 93% of the people in Zaporizhia voted to join, 87% of the voters did in Kherson, 98% in Luhansk, and more than 99% in Donetsk. Of course, the U.S. and NATO, the West, have denounced these referendums as shams. From where I am, I can't really say how accurate these numbers are. But the, you know, they're trying to say that they're totally staged and that they were done at gunpoint. But I think it would be more of a fairer criticism to say that, you know, the people that are pro-Kiev have probably fled, at least, and, you know, to hold these referendums after taking a territory in a war, you know, definitely not the most fair results. But again, I'm not in a position to say. But, it, you know, it was clear that this was going to happen. And Russian lawmakers have said that they plan to move quickly to take steps to annex these territories. And Putin is expected to address Russia's parliament on the referendums and annexation plans on Friday. So they're moving ahead with this quickly. Russia's upper house, the speaker of the Russian Federation Council, which is Russia's upper house of parliament, said that legislation on absorbing these territories could be discussed on October 4th. So, and other lawmakers have suggested annexation could come sooner, possibly as early as Friday. But either way, it's clear that this is going to happen pretty quick, and it will bring the war into a dangerous new phase as the U.S. and NATO show no sign of backing down on supporting Ukrainian attacks on these regions. And Russian officials have said that the territories could potentially be defended with nuclear weapons, which we're going to get into in this next article. But first, I just want to mention our sponsor, How the West Brought War to Ukraine by Benjamin Ablo. It's a great short book about the steps that the U.S., NATO, and other Western powers have taken to provoke the war that we're seeing today in Ukraine. And now, you don't have to just take my word for it. This book is endorsed by some pretty heavy hitters, Noam Chomsky on the cover there, and also Chaz Freeman, John F. Matlock, Douglas McGregor, and John J. Mearsheimer, Richard Sakwa, just all experts and people that have really important voices today. They're speaking out against, you know, the reckless policies that have led to this and the reckless policies that have continued. And one thing that Chaz Freeman said in his little blurb about the book that I think about a lot is basically, without understanding the history documented in this book, there will be no de-escalation of the U.S.-Russia confrontation on Europe's eastern border. So that's important. If people don't understand why this has happened, how are we going to stop it? So How the West Brought War to Ukraine, you could find the link in the description. Buy the hard copy, only $10. But if you want to buy the ebook, the Kindle version, it's only 99 cents. That's the lowest level he could sell it for. Okay, so back to the news. Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president and current deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, he, you know, talked more about this nuclear, these nuclear warnings that, and threats we've been hearing about. And he said that he doesn't think the U.S. and NATO would do anything if Russia launched a nuclear strike in Ukraine over fears of a nuclear apocalypse. So he wrote this on Telegram, you know, basically bringing up, just talking about a possible scenario where Russia might use a nuclear weapon. He said, quote, "Let's imagine that Russia is forced to use its most formidable weapons against the Ukrainian regime, which has committed a large-scale act of aggression that is endangering the very existence of our state. I believe that NATO will not directly interfere in the conflict, even in this scenario," end quote. So what he's saying there, what he's also reiterated, is that Moscow, under their military doctrine, they believe they have the right to use nuclear weapons if Russia's existence is threatened, if something poses an existential threat. We saw Putin last week say that they could use these weapons to defend Russia's territorial integrity. And what's significant is that now we have the referendums and annexation seems to be moving forward. So these areas of Ukraine, they're going to consider their territory. But Medvedev is saying that he doesn't think the U.S. and NATO would really do anything, despite warnings from Jake Sullivan and other U.S. officials that have warned of catastrophic consequences if Russia uses a weapon. And it's just crazy to me that these conversations are even happening, that we've gotten to this point. Now you have Medvedev kind of surmising of a possible scenario of what he thinks NATO would do if they used the nuclear weapon. And he's saying that to the US and NATO, giving Ukraine weapons is just a business to them. Like they don't really care that much about it, and that their own security is much more important than the fate of Ukraine. He said that US and European, quote, demagogues are not going to die in a nuclear apocalypse. That is why they will swallow the use of any weapon in the current conflict, end quote. So just, you know, concerning to see more of this talk of nuclear weapons. And it's just so important to stress that moving forward, Ukraine is going to be using US and NATO intelligence and weapons to attack what Russia will consider its territory, and what they're saying they will defend with nuclear weapons if they need to. The next one here, more arms for Ukraine. This is according to a report from Reuters. The US is preparing a new $1.1 billion arms package for Ukraine that is expected to be announced soon, probably this week, I would guess. The weapons package will likely include the HIMARS rocket systems, HIMARS ammunition, counter-drone systems, radar systems, training, and technical support. The arms package is expected to be provided to Kyiv using the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, as opposed to sending the arms directly from U.S. military stockpiles. So this Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, it allows the Biden administration to purchase military equipment for Ukraine from the arms industry, as opposed to pulling it from, you know, the weapons that the U.S. military already has. The new package, it will bring the total amount of U.S. arms pledged for Ukraine since Russia invaded on February 24th to over $16 billion. And that's just in weapons. You know, they're giving Ukraine support in other ways and spending money in other ways, but over $16 billion in weapons. And this money is still being pulled from the $40 billion aid package Biden signed back in May, but Congress is preparing more to send more. Congress unveiled on Tuesday, I went over some of this yesterday, a new $12.3 billion aid package for Ukraine that will be included in a stopgap funding bill that needs to be passed this week to avoid a government shutdown. So they're just sliding it into this stopgap bill. And it includes military and economic support for Ukraine and will bring total U.S. spending on the war since Russia invaded. If this number, if this figure is right, this $12.3 billion to $65.9 billion, which is the same number as Russia's entire military budget for 2021, $65.9 billion. Now, you know, you could give or take a few hundred million there when we're talking in billions, but still, I mean, I just really think that says a lot that this money that they're going to spend in less than a year is Russia's entire military budget for 2021. All right, next one here. A White House official said that sanctions on Russia open markets for U.S. weapon makers. Sanctions that make it harder for Russia to export military equipment create an opportunity for U.S. weapons makers to find new markets, a White House official said at an arms industry conference on Tuesday, the conference known as COMDEF. So this is Kara Abercrombie. She's on the National Security Council. She is the Director of Defense Policy and Arms Control. Doesn't sound like she's interested in arms control. She said, quote, as a practical matter, countries that have had to rely on Russian equipment are going to find it very difficult to get even basic supplies from Russia's defense industrial base. It is an opportunity, certainly, for industry members in the room. It is an opportunity for the United States to provide the support that these countries need, end quote. So she's saying sanctions are going to make it harder for Russia to export weapons to countries that need, that rely on Russian military equipment. Well, this is a great opportunity for American arms makers to get in on the action there. And, you know, the Biden administration's Ukraine policy has been a total boon for the U.S. Defense industry. Besides profiting from the arms that are being sent to Ukraine, the industry stands to gain from former Soviet states phasing out their Russian-made equipment for NATO armaments. So Abercrombie said that the U.S. and its allies are working to rapidly transition former Soviet states to NATO equipment, and said there there are also opportunities to arm countries in the Asia Pacific. So as part of this effort, the U.S. recently announced a $2.2 billion package in foreign military financing. Foreign military financing is a State Department program that gives foreign governments money to purchase U.S. arms. So this $2.2 billion, it was divided about $1 billion would go to Ukraine, and the remaining funds, the $1.2 billion, will be divided among Albania, Bosnia, Bulgaria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Georgia, Greece, Kosovo, Latvia, Lithuania, Moldova, Montenegro, North Macedonia, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia. So just about virtually all those countries use old, Soviet military equipment, old Russian-made stuff. So they're trying to get them all, transferred to U.S. and other Western arms so they can make money selling them weapons. That's a big part of this. That's kind of the name of the game here, that Lloyd Austin's pals at Raytheon are really just cashing in on this policy. Who would have thought that? Next one, this is from Responsible Statecraft. They conducted a poll and it found that Americans support quick diplomacy to end the war in Ukraine. So nearly 60% of Americans would support the United States engaging in diplomatic efforts as soon as possible to end the war in Ukraine, even if that means Ukraine has to make concessions to Russia. So the survey was conducted by Data for Progress on behalf of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. And it found that a plurality, 49%, said that the Biden administration and Congress have not done enough diplomatically to help end the war. 37% said that they had. So this is just interesting to see that it looks like people do favor diplomacy. I think in most of the polls that we see asked about Ukraine, they don't really even ask about diplomacy so much. So I think this was an important thing to ask people. Okay, so the next one is from Jason Ditz. Iran and the IAEA, they restart talks, but neither side has changed positions. So I was discussing this issue yesterday, that the Iran and the IAEA, that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog, they're still at odds over this investigation into traces of uranium that were found at undeclared nuclear sites in Iran. So they're restarting talks. These are the safeguard issues that they're discussing. So maybe they'll make some progress here. I don't know. The IAEA doesn't seem like they're going to accept anything Iran's going to tell them. And Iran, they're denying that. They've been saying that this investigation is based on false evidence. So who knows if they'll be able to make any progress, but it's just something to keep an eye on, as talks to revive the nuclear deal between the U.S. and Iran are totally stalled, and there's no sign that the U.S. is going to lift sanctions anytime soon. But if there's some progress here, maybe some progress can be made in that direction. But I think it's pretty unlikely that the U.S. is going to be lifting sanctions on Iran anytime soon, especially now Biden's under pressure because of the protests that are going on in Iran. And people are saying that they want to help the people in Iran by keeping sanctions on Iran, which is just ridiculous because we know how sanctions hurt ordinary people. Okay, so that's it for the news. We got some great viewpoints, as always, one from David Stockman and one from a great one from Ted Snyder, fact-checking Biden's UN speech. So this I discussed a little bit, just about how Biden at the UN showed the U.S. hypocrisy, because he said Russia violated the U.N. charter by taking a country's territory by force. And I just pointed out in my short news coverage that, the U.S. is occupying Syria. But here, Ted really gets thoroughly into how much nonsense that is for the U.S. to be making that accusation. And it's not just that aspect of it. It's also other things that Biden said. So you should go check that out. But that's it for the news for today. A reminder, October 8th in Washington, D.C. at the Department of Justice, there will be a rally for Julian Assange that I will be speaking at from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. So attend that if you can. You could look up There's going to be other rallies in other cities. Try to get more information on that. I know in London is going to be the big one. People are going to surround the British Parliament. So that's very important. You could contact the show news@antiwar.com. You can contact me pretty easily. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can message me there. I should be kind of promoting the YouTube more. Most people that listen to the are listening to the show in podcast form, which is great. That's kind of the idea that I had with this podcast, but there is also a video on YouTube and Odyssey. So you can go subscribe to those channels, help pump those numbers up a little bit. But that's it for me for today. I will catch you guys tomorrow with some more news. Thank you for listening.